Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, everyone. We've made it through another week together. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Tim has the day off. Today, we're going to be talking with Nate and Kaylee Raderman. We'll be doing that in a few minutes as we discuss the Museum of Shadows in Elmwood, Nebraska. That's going to come up in a few minutes. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Remember, if you're looking to get those awesome stories and books and things that you want to take with you on the road, try audibletrial.com/darkness. You'll get a 30-day free trial, one free downloaded book, and you can give it a shot for yourself. Over 180,000 titles that cover every genre, every kind of book you could possibly want. Make sure you check that out. We'll also be sponsored today by Amazon.com. And if you're ever going to purchase anything through Amazon, anything at all, please use our links. You can go to darknessradio.com, click on the Killer Deals link, and you'll see the Amazon buttons there. Click on the corresponding one for your area, and every order you place by using those buttons, a very small portion of the sale goes a long way to help keep the show going and on the air. That's a little bit of information up front. We've got great shows coming for you next week again. We've got a whole new lineup and more True Crime Tuesday. Remember, if you haven't signed up already, you can do so now, and you can find that at darknessradio.com. Click on the True Crime banner. That'll take you in. You can sign up and subscribe. It's only $5 a month. That's just $1.25 per episode. Less than most song downloads now. So you get an entire 90-minute to 120-minute episode of True Crime Tuesday delivered to you every month. It's only $5 a month. Go sign up for that right now. We are talking about the best in paranormal talk radio. So certainly when this email came my way, and these two introduced themselves, I knew we had to have them on the show. They are the owners of the Museum of Shadows in Elmwood, Nebraska. Nate and Kaylee Raderman are with us this evening. Raderman, is that the right way? Raderman?
Yes, Raderman.
Raderman. Okay, just double check and make sure I get that right for the rest of the show. Nate and Kaylee Raderman, welcome to the show and thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right, this is fascinating. Let me find out a little bit about both of you first before we dive into this. But have you both had an interest in the paranormal?
I guess I'll let Kaylee go first. Go
ahead. Oh, absolutely. I actually have been having experiences from the time I was a very little girl. So I have a little bit different of a case as to where I've always known that there was something there as to where it was a little bit differently from how Nate actually got started.
Well, Kaylee, let me ask you real quickly, what type of experiences did you have growing up?
I actually would have dreams about what would happen before it would actually happen. And it was between the ages of about 6 to 10 years old at the time. And I would have dreams that had to do with death in my immediate family. So of course it was very scary for me. And at the time, I had no idea that it was going to lead into me actually becoming a medium or clairvoyant as I got older and learned more about my gift.
Nate, you've married a woman who dreams the future and is a clairvoyant. Man, you've got to be one of the squeakiest clean individuals on planet Earth, right? Because you can't pull anything over on this woman.
Of course.
Nate, what kind of experiences did you have?
Well, actually, I was kind of more 50-50, part believer, part skeptic, until about 2006, and then that's when I actually had my real first actual encounter. I actually purchased a home, and after I moved in, all this strange thing started happening, from doors opening and closing to actually seeing a full figure apparition of an older gentleman. And from there, it literally just sparked my interest, and I wanted to know more and had to know more.
Well, that's you say it's so matter of fact now. Did you hear that, Kaylee? Oh, yeah, I saw this, that, and full body apparition, and then I realized I should know more about this. Nate, that's very, very dispassionate for a man who got to see the Holy Grail. You got to see a full body apparition?
I did. And
what was that like?
To be honest, at that time, it was very startling. I didn't know what to think. First, you know, honestly, when I first seen it, my first thought was, oh my God, there's somebody in my house.
Right.
And then it was, you know, after the more I looked at it, I could, you know, see through it. And I mean, I could go down to very detailed, pale skin, hair parted and combed a certain way to, even the clothing he was wearing, just all buttoned up, tucked in and everything. And it was pretty interesting and it a little bit startling.
Did he see you as well? Or was this one of those fleeting moments in time, like a residual haunting that you were witnessing?
I believe he seen me because he actually went up from the basement and you could hear the footsteps coming up. And before I even seen him, I actually thought it was one of the cats we had. And
how big of cats do you have, Nate?
Well, I had two at the time, so
it either sounds like a man wearing boots coming up our stairs or our cat named Boots. Either one, it's definitely narrowed down to one of those two.
Yeah. So I just figured, you know, the cats were fighting on the stairs. And so I went into the kitchen and then that's when I actually seen him. And he literally, you know, looked right at me and just was like staring at me. And, you know, of course I was kind of jumped back, you know, thinking this person was in here. And yeah, it was quite interesting.
Did he seem as astounded to see you as you were to see him?
He didn't really do a whole lot. He just kind of more or less just stood there and just kind of more or less just stared. Didn't really do much, you know, wasn't really startled or anything. Just almost had like a blank look on his face. Like he was just staring at me.
What the hell is this man doing in my dining room?
yeah.
Very strange. Now, do you have any idea who this man was?
I do. Actually doing research on the house. He was actually kind of an interesting story. Upon the research, the city kind of wanted to keep everything private, and they would always, I'd go in to City Hall, was asking some questions, and they told me to drop it and to leave it alone and to actually get out five different times. And I was like, well, why such a cover-up?
Right.
So no,
that doesn't make me feel awkward about the house I bought. Listen, See, you're just going to forget what you want to know, and you're going to go home, and you're going to shut up. You're going to enjoy it. That would be enough to unnerve me alone, that they're telling you to just don't worry about it and stop pushing for an answer.
Yeah, and I, of course, you know, wanted to find out more and why, you know, why such a secret. And I literally had an attorney look into it. Well, turns out somebody was actually killed in the house, and that's basically why the cover-up, because that was a city employee who was actually killed there. So
was that who you were confronting? Was that the city employee, or was it?
It was, because after I found out the name, I started putting some pictures together. I actually pulled up some stuff from a funeral and actually was able to, just from what the guy I seen matched up with that guy, and that's who it was, so...
Were you and Kaylee together at this point?
No, not yet.
Okay. So, Kaylee, he tells you he's got a house and he's seen a full-blown ghost. Is that something that surprises you, or did you two meet on SpookyDate.com?
No, it didn't surprise me at all. I mean, I had always obviously had an interest in the paranormal and the unknown, and the fact that it was... so hard for people to believe that there was something else out there that not everyone could see. And I actually met him because he was looking for another person to join his team at the time. So I had joined his investigation team and we were best friends, to be totally honest. And then he, you know, eventually asked me out one day and that was it.
Aw, look at that. Love is fond and memorable, isn't it? The way it brings us together. In our search for dead people, it brings life and sparks love. So that's great. All right. Now, was this a house that you owned, Nate, or were you just a renter?
I actually owned the home at the time.
Okay. And any other activity take place after that? Did you ever confront or see the spirit of the worker again?
Yeah, I started, you know, putting up cameras, running some audio to see if I can capture any EVPs, that sort of thing. And then, which I actually did, I captured several audio and tons of different, you know, photos to video footage of different things, of doors closing, even the apparition. I did catch him on film, actually downstairs in the basement. He just basically went, you know, walked right through a wall. So I've captured him several times, I guess. And
well, if you walked through a wall, did you look into original plans? Did it used to be an opening and a doorway there? Why would
I did check? Yeah, I did actually check out the blueprints. There was actually where he did walk through. At one point, there was a doorway that did go into one of the bedrooms that was down there. But over the years, you know, it got walled up, and then basically to get into that bedroom, you had to go a different way. So
interesting. Wouldn't it be great to be able to track down family members and friends and find out if he ever complained about the house being haunted? And did he ever run into some goofy guy in his dining room, you know, that he didn't understand why he was there, who he was there, and then vanished? You know, if they're living kind of a residual, contiguous life that's taking place at the same time you are, you know, living in that home, you would almost have to think that we are bumping into each other. We are what's haunting each other.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow. All right, so you find out information. Do you get any more info on this guy, who he was? Did you talk to any friends or family?
I reached out to some family members, and I did play some of the audio that I've captured, and they confirmed, you know, that was his voice, which I've never heard, you know, before or knew him. And so they did confirm that, and then I did show them some video footage, and from the footage that I've seen, it was hard to tell, but you could definitely see an outline of a figure, and then one of them was a little bit more detailed than the others, but
Do you have any of these video pieces or audio up so people, listeners to our show, could find them?
I think there's some I have some audio, I believe, on tripparanormal.com, and you could find some on there, but I have the videos. I'll have to double check, but they might be on my YouTube page. If so, it'd be under the Trip Paranormal on, YouTube.
Okay.
But if not, I'll be adding them to the site, just so you guys can check them out.
So you both are, kind of surrounded by the supernatural in your lives. Tell me about the Museum of Shadows in Elmwood, Nebraska. Is this a home that you bought or a place that you're renting to put in the museum? Tell me about how this came to you.
Well, the museum, to be honest, actually kind of around the same time, in 2006, I actually had some items that were kind of, when I started doing the whole paranormal investigating, some people actually reached out to me and said, hey, I got these two items here that have some activity and I don't want them in my house anymore. And that's basically what started the whole museum. So from then on, people from around the world just kind of started donating everything. And over the years, it's just been building up. And I figured, why not eventually just have them on display and let people read what actually other people have experienced. So every item in the museum actually has a card. And what they've encountered or experienced, and then what we've actually have encountered or, you know, got during our quarantine process, just so we can kind of see if there's even actually anything attached to the item prior to it actually coming into the museum.
Kaylee, so, were you reticent to do something like this, being so sensitive and having your abilities? Were you afraid that this might overload the systems?
There were certain times where it would get a little bit overwhelming. I think at this point, they're so used to us and we're so used to them. It is a lot of energy in one place at a time. And we even have people come in and just kind of step back after walking in the door, just like, whoa, there is a lot of energy in here. But being in there every single day, we're just so used to it that I'm very careful about, you know, protecting myself and making sure that I'm not affected a certain way, I can do, you know, some sort of a bubble around myself so I'm not overly affected by anyone in there. But by doing the quarantine process and knowing what's attached to the items, we don't have to worry about anything dark or dangerous being in there.
All right, I've got to know, how do you quarantine an item? What exactly? Do you wrap it in aluminum foil? Do you sprinkle it with holy water? What do you do when you get these items in?
Well, the quarantine process is actually a very lengthy process. We have two law enforcement officers and two FBI agents that actually research every item, because when we receive the item, it actually goes through quarantine, so we can actually see, basically, you know, like we said, to see if there's actually something attached. And then we actually go in with that item in our other building that we have specifically for quarantine, that we go in, actually investigate just to see what kind of activity we pick up on. And then, you know, like I said, all the agents and all them are doing their research to basically validate the stories and the claims that these people are actually experiencing.
Well, that's interesting in itself. How do you get FBI and law enforcement officials on your side for this, first of all, that aren't afraid of ridicule and ruining their career?
Second,
do they go about verifying paranormal activity?
Well, two of them are family friends, and the other ones are just really good friends of ours. And they've all actually had some sort of encounter or experience in the paranormal field. So they've already have kind of an open mind to it, which is, you know, always a good thing. And basically they, with, you know, with their stuff and their whole
clearance,
they can literally, you know, check whatever they need to and basically see, okay, yeah.
And you know, folks, for the record, that was not an EVP. That was just Kaylee in the background saying clearance.
Yes, I was
kidding. Sorry.
No problem. I know, I'll just get the email. Oh my God, did you hear just before he said clearance, there was a little voice that said clearance.
Yeah, but but we like literally, we will have, you know, they'll do all their research.
Okay.
They'll check
and what if
everything
they come back
out
and they say, we can't verify or deny that this is what it is?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is, to be honest, is just us going in there with it. It's just the items that they're checking out are items that we have that have actually, like, killed people and that sort of thing, just because they can pull, like, medical records and, you know, all that sort of thing and actually verify it.
Wait, you have items
oh,
that
yeah.
killed people?
Oh, yeah. We have axes. We have a dental kit from Germany that was used in a very, very gruesome torture. We have all kinds of stuff.
Well, and those aren't considered evidence for crimes?
After so many years, they can release them. So we had to basically sign a deal with that local law enforcement agency or courthouse and basically say that we're taking possession and as to why. And yeah, we can never sell them or give them away. And if we ever did, it would have to go back through them before they could actually, anything could even go forward in some sort of way.
Wow. That is intriguing. I never even realized that was possible. Does that
creep
you out to have items that were used to murder people and end lives? I mean, it's one thing when you've got, you know, Silly Sally, the talking doll that, you know, the little girl passed away and won't leave. Okay, that's one thing. But to know these tools were used in bludgeonings and axe murders and such, I would think that would just be the major ick factor.
Yeah, there's a few that we have that, to be honest, it kind of gives you that gross feeling just if you look at it real close, because you can see, you know, everything's original that's on it. So if you look really close, you can see blood and all kinds of things. But yeah, there's a few that are pretty gross.
All right, so you go through this quarantine where they're going to evaluate, research, and double check the story on these pieces. You're going into an investigate. Now, what do you do to investigate them? I mean, it's not like you turn a big spotlight on it and ask it a bunch of questions. So how do you get proof or get this thing moving so that you can quantify that there might be paranormal activity around it?
Well, we'll put the item. So for an example, like say we got a doll in that was donated. We will take that doll. We'll put it in one of our quarantine rooms, which is a soundproof room. It's locked from the outside. We do have camera people that watch our cameras 24/7. We'll go in there with every piece of ghost hunting equipment that you can imagine, from K2 to SLS cameras to thermal imaging. You name it, we'll use it and actually investigate for about a 2-week period, if not longer, and just kind of see and go through all that evidence to actually see if we capture anything from that item. And if we don't, then, which we do get a lot of items that actually don't have anything attached and the stories don't check out. So.
And what do you happen. Do with those pieces then?
We'll either offer them back to the people that donated them, and if they refuse to take them back, then we'll just get rid of them, just destroy them, or basically just get rid of them.
I don't like that. Sounds very mysterious and nefarious on your part. We just get rid of them, Dave. You better not keep asking questions. You may get a package in the mail.
Some people that just want to say that they've donated something and that they've sent it in.
Oh, gotcha.
Or there's people that want to see if by sending us an object, even if it was a Tupperware dish, if we would actually put it in there, not knowing if there was something attached, or them knowing there wasn't anything, just to kind of test us. So there is a lot, unfortunately, that we get that won't come in because we find nothing with it.
Okay. And actually, one of our craziest things we've ever had, and by when Kaylee said, we'll just, you know, they'll send an item just to see if it'll be donated into the museum. Mm-hmm. We had one come in that literally had no postage, thought it was weird, and the bottom of the box was damp. Open it up, and there was somebody's arm, literally from, where you bend your arm all the way down, just chopped off and put in a box.
Wow. And so how long did that go through quarantine?
Actually, that's under an investigation right now.
That's good. That's good.
Wow. Law enforcement had to take that one just because, it's somebody's real arm. And
that puts you two into a crime. You're now part of this history for this crime. That's got to be weird.
Yeah, it's a little crazy. All I know is they obviously had to. We had to show proof that we received it and all that, and rule us out right away.
Right. How do you show proof for something that had no postage on it?
Well, it was delivered, the mail carrier to the local post office. What they did is they put it in a drop box, and where they sent it from in this other state, literally they just...
There was no return address.
Yeah, there was no return address.
Oh, so they literally just bring it to you anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They just, for some weird reason, which technically the post office should have refused it and never delivered it, but they decided to, and yeah.
So, Kaylee, you get a package like that, and do you ever tell Nate, maybe we look at different hobbies? Maybe, honey, maybe it would be better for you to just look at internet porn and you know, maybe just to that point when we're getting arms that we should fold up shop.
It was gross. I mean, to be honest, when we got that, I thought he was messing with me. I was just like, you did not. There is not, an arm in the box. And it was really disgusting. I mean, and for someone to think that there's no way for that to be traced back to them is kind of ridiculous anyways, because there's always a way to trace, stuff through the mail. So
I'm pretty sure. Duh, we watch SVU enough, right?
Exactly.
CSI is going to be on that case. So how long ago did that happen?
Oh, that was like 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah, it was right after we first opened.
Yeah.
Okay. Any idea on what's going on with that? Have you had any responses or things sent to you afterwards saying
no. Yeah, no.
Trying to give you a hand with your new museum?
No, we haven't had any... anything, show up or know anything weird happen, I guess. And last we knew, law enforcement was still researching or checking everything out. And they had a few leads, but they said they couldn't really discuss that with us because, it's an ongoing case and whatever they find. And if it finds out that somebody literally just happened to have an accident and decide to send it in. I guess the arm eventually would come back to us if we wanted it, but
we don't want it. We don't.
I don't think
it.
I want it.
Listen, I'm a big fan. I happen to have lost my arm in a strange machete accident, and I thought you guys should have it for your museum.
So
you're putting that out to our listeners right now. If you're going to do something like that, just send a letter to let us know why you're sending us a severed body part.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it's not part of an ongoing investigation.
Right. So you're not like, you're not poo-pooing the idea of taking an item like that for the future. You just want to know the provenance of where it came from.
We would prefer no more human anatomy freshly sent.
All right, freshly sent. Oh, good God. If it's been cured and hanging on the line for a while, then you're fine. I gotcha. Okay. Well, you guys, at least you've got some morals involved. That's the important part. Okay. So you get this place, this house. Now tell me about the location itself. Did you say you bought this, you own this place?
Right now, we are currently renting the building.
Okay.
We are about in August, actually, we're going to be expanding to an even bigger building just because we have so many items that get donated. We just need to add more space. But the building was actually built in 1890. So, and over the years, I mean, there was like a paint and wallpaper store along with I guess several paint and wallpaper stores, and then also more of like a general store that was in there. And then one of the owners did embalming in his spare time in the basement. Yep.
It's a true story.
Makes your hobby seem a lot less weird, that's for sure.
Yep.
So what
yep.
are you doing this weekend? Oh, I'm just going to be practicing some embalming at home. You want to get swing on by? No, we're good. We got this thing. All right, so it's certainly old. It's got a lot of history to it as well. Are there any deaths associated with it aside from the, you know, embalming and that? But I mean, any murders or death or suicide on site?
No, nothing on site. The only odd thing, I guess, other than the really cool historic factor to it, it would just be the embalming in the basement.
Okay.
But ironically, we did have someone come to one of our ghost hunts in the evening, and her uncle did embalming with the owner in the basement at one point. So he actually did have people come help him and hang out with him down there while he did it. It's kind of a small world.
A small, weird, twisted little world, Kaylee, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You see, you decide... all these weird parts of your life coming together, why open up a museum? How did you start getting items to begin with?
To be honest, after those few people reached out to me in 2006 about the items, I literally had the two items come in and I just made one post online, just said, hey, I was donated two haunted items, and from there it took off. And next thing I know, I have 50 items coming in and so on. And it just kept, you know, over the years just kept piling up, and it's like, we just need to put this stuff on display and let people read about it and learn the history and see what other people have experienced and stuff. So that's kind of how the museum really, really got started.
Were there ever items in the beginning that you got that you were like, nah, don't want that?
There was a couple, but I mean, I didn't store them in my house. I just stored them in a storage unit just because they were pretty creepy. And I mean, for one, we have an actual shrunken head that was donated from Sri Lanka from a tribe. I didn't want that in my house. And same with an embalming table from 1913. So.
Why draw the line there? I'm just curious.
Just because, you know, with this, for one, an embalming table with all, you know, all the death and the people on it, and, you know, just with the attachments, I didn't want, you know, I guess that in my own house. I'd rather just leave work at work, and when I come home, I'd like to just relax and not have to communicate with spirits.
And the shrunken head, what do you do with that when you decide, you know what, it just goes into storage?
Yeah, I just put them all into storage units. And
can you do me a favor and just not pay that? And please let that appear on Storage Wars someday. I want to watch one of those morons open a drawer and find a shrunken head. Oh. That would make my day. That or a severed arm. Whichever you're willing to put in the drawer is fine by me, Nate. I don't mean this sarcastically, but shrunken heads are worth a lot of money if they're legitimate shrunken heads.
They are. Especially with this one, you know, coming from the actual tribe, and they actually sent a letter and a whole detailed thing with it.
How did they hear about you, Nate? How did they go?
This is what I don't understand.
Fate magazine, about. And they see your spread, and they're like, oh.
I think it was on Twitter, to be honest. I think that's where somebody they know or something, because all I know is it came from the Sri Lanka and they had an actual seal and their stamp. I guess they have their own custom stamp. And yeah, it was, we had to get somebody to translate, and it was pretty interesting.
And have you had the head authenticated?
We have, and it all checks out perfectly. That's why we do the whole quarantine, so we make sure it's all legit before it actually, you know, goes into the museum.
Well, I have to know, did you do any EVP work with it?
I did. We have some chanting, also some drumming, and a few other really faint voices, but in another language. So we do have a couple things with those.
Okay. When you start getting that type of evidence with an item, how freaky is that for you, in all honesty?
To be honest, I mean, it don't really creep me out a whole lot because you know, I do travel around the world to investigate pretty crazy locations. So I guess I'm kind of used to it. Mm-hmm. Now, in the beginning, I would have been, you know, a little creeped out because I was new to it. So,
do you ever pull them out and, you know, like hide it under the wife's pillow just to see what her reaction is going to be?
No, I don't do that. I don't want to be that mean.
All right. Well, it's that time in the show, folks. Our friends from Audible bring you a brand new Theater of the Mind. Tim has gone deep into the archives for this one. In this, another edition of Theater of the Mind. Theater of the Mind. The Curse of the Mask. A true tale told from Glenn Thomas. I've always had an interest in the creepy and the macabre. My house is cluttered with strange collections like human teeth, creepy dolls, strange pieces of art done by serial killers, and the like. Now, I was always on the lookout for my next fascinating and freaky piece to add to my eclectic stockpile of oddities when I got a strange box shipped to my door. It was this hand-carved wooden mask. It was terrifying and a perfect item for my weird world. Nestled under the mask was a short note from my ex-girlfriend informing me she had bought this monstrosity while we were dating and wanted to surprise me with it for our anniversary, which, unfortunately, we never got to. She said she had no need for it and didn't know anyone else to give it to, so she wanted me to have it. Now, you have to admire her style. It was really weird and right up my alley. The details were beautifully carved into this hideous, demonic-looking face. It had long black hair that hung from it, and inside the mask were a series of patterns painted in these geometric designs I was not familiar with. Now, I would definitely have to do some research on this at some point to fully appreciate what I was now the proud owner of. I placed it on my shelf, dead center, between my creepy dolls and vampire hunting kit, and smiled to myself at how perfect it looked, and how well it seemed to fit in amongst the creepy clutter. Well, that night, as I was shutting off lights and heading to bed, I heard a loud crack come from my living room. I walked back in, flipped the switch, and there, smack dab in the middle of the room, was the mask, staring up at me from the carpet. The long fibers of the rug cradling it and giving a strange, eerie look to the mask, and an even stranger appearance with the shag poking through the eye holes looking like worms bursting forth from a decaying corpse. I picked up my new treasure off the ground, turned to put it back on the shelf, and as I turned toward the shelving unit, I heard the distinct sound of a male voice behind me call out, "Hey!" Now, I spun around, startled, and I found myself facing an empty room. I knew what I had heard, but could not find a source. Every hair on my neck and arms stood upright in more alarm than fear. The voice hadn't been scary or menacing, just unexpected. I returned the mask to its new home and flicked the light off and headed toward the stairs and my bed. I had obviously had a long day and was in desperate need of sleep. When I got to the top of the stairs, I heard a loud creak behind me, like someone stepped onto the bottom stair. I turned quickly and my knees went weak. I had to grab the handrails to steady myself. There, at the bottom of the stairs, was the outline of someone. Medium build, thin, and wild hair. My voice eked out, barely audible. "What do you want? What are you doing here?" It just stood there, unmoving, staring up at me, its silhouetted frame backlit by the clock from the microwave in the kitchen. I couldn't see its face, and I was not close enough to the light switch to reach it to illuminate the hall and the stairway. I just stood there, breathing heavily, unsure what to do or what to say. I backed up slowly, the stairs creaking softly as I moved. My hand was extended behind me, searching for the light switch. The intruder stood silent and motionless. I was filled with dread and abject horror, but forced myself to turn away long enough to locate the switch and see who I was facing. Maybe by lighting up the area, I would gain some advantage. The light switch clicked, and the hallway was filled with light. My head spun quickly back to face my mystery guest, and when it did, there was no one there. Had he backed out of sight in the moment that it took for me to look away and find the light switch? Then I felt what I can only describe as a hand brush mine on the light switch, and as quickly as it turned on, the lights were off again. I moved without thought, swiftly back down the stairs, and I hit the light at the bottom and began charging from room to room, flipping every and any switch I could so that not a corner would be left in the dark. Somewhere along the line, I had dropped my cell phone and was now backed somewhat poorly into a corner where I stood. The only sound was my labored breathing and the ticking of the clock in the hall. I tried to focus my ears, straining to hear footsteps or anything giving me a possible location of my intruders. That's when I cried out. I'm going to leave. Take what you want and please leave. I won't call the cops. I don't want trouble. I just want to be left alone. That's when I made a break for the door, where I made good on my promise and did not call the cops, as I wasn't sure what had happened and was second-guessing myself as to what I had witnessed. I didn't know what to tell them for sure and did not want to embarrass myself if I had been mistaken about what had just happened. Now I waited a few hours and I returned. The house seemed untouched. Nothing inside had been moved or taken, and I had somehow gotten the nerve up to walk through every possible place a person could hide, and I found nothing. There was no one there. I made my way back to my room, slowly climbed into bed, reassuring myself I had just imagined it all. I was tired, under a lot of stress in my personal and professional life, and I must have hallucinated the whole damn thing. I lay on my bed and rolled to my stomach, slid my arm under my pillow for extra support under my head, when I felt something. I sat upright and moved the pillow, and there, lying beneath it, was the mask from downstairs. Now, I thought I had put it back on the shelf before I came upstairs. Could I have mistaken and dragged it up here with me, maybe throwing it on the bed and not remembering? Now, I convinced myself this is what had to have happened. I threw the ugly thing to the nightstand and drifted off into the most restless sleep I'd ever experienced. My alarm bell rang and I groggily woke up, swung my legs to the floor and stood, preparing to make my way to the bathroom. I took my first step and took a hell of a stumble. My foot came to rest on the inside of the mask, and it was curved just enough to send me falling to the ground, and I felt the sickening crack of my forearm as I tried to catch myself. I let out a yelp of pain and anger for having been so clumsy. I rolled, clutching my arm, reeling in pain. I'd broken the damn thing. A perfect ending to a horrendous night. Now, things only got worse for the next week. On the way to the ER, I was broadsided and sustained a concussion. I got removed from a big and financially secure project at work and took a serious hit to my pay. Then, found my favorite furry friend had passed away in his sleep a week later. He was an old cat, but spry to the end, and it was a surprise. A dark cloud had descended onto my life, and I was confused as to why. It took a few more minor mishaps to make me realize all of this started the day I got that damn mask. I knew it was ridiculous to even consider. Even though I loved the supernatural and the concepts behind it, I was not much of a believer. I didn't think this actually existed. But aside from all the bad luck I was having, I kept waking to see that wild-haired menace lurking, dashing from my room, peeking around corners, slamming doors. I started looking into the mask, left a few voicemails for my ex to ask where she had gotten it, and I got no response. I checked a few message boards online and was directed to call a woman in New Orleans who knew all about this kind of stuff. And who better to call than a woman named Bloody Mary? I told her of my situation and about the mask, half expecting her to laugh at me or hang up. She took it very seriously and professionally. She had me explain the mask in detail and the markings inside, and that's when she told me someone had passed on a cursed item to me. Something unearthly had been bound to it, and it was meant to do harm. I shook my head in disbelief and shock. Had my ex really cursed me? I mean, seriously, what the f... She told me to get sea salt, a cloth, and rope, and gave me some things to say and do. I placed the mask in the middle of the cloth, covered it in the salt, and then folded the cloth over it. Then used the rope to wrap around the cloth with the mask still inside. I said the incantation and took the package to the nearest bridge where I hurled it off the side. I went home, said some blessings in each room, and worked my way out to the front door where I insisted whatever was there had to leave. I stood there feeling somewhat foolish, but at the same time relieved, when the front door slammed violently. I jumped and let out a nervous laugh. I never did hear from that ex again, or from my wild-haired, raving, shadowy roommate, and never may still not be long enough for me.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back. We've got more coming your way. Our guests this evening, Nate and Kaylee Ratterman, and they are the owners of the Museum of Shadows in Elmwood, Nebraska. And we've been finding out a little bit about this couple and their very bizarre hobby and collections, and we're back with them right now. All right, guys, let's start to talk about some of the items that you've collected. We've heard about the Shrunken Head. Now, did that find its way into the museum eventually?
It did. It is on display in the museum right now.
What type of precautions do you have to take when you're bringing all of these haunted items in together in one place? Or when you flip out the lights, is there just like a giant poltergeist party going on?
Well, when we move the items in, just because of the attachment, we wear, it kind of sounds funny, but we actually wear kind of like a hazmat suit. And we actually have like gloves and everything on just so that way our actual skin's not touching that item.
Okay.
Because with that energy exchange, you do risk them attaching to you. So just kind of a precautious protective measure that we do when we move the items into the museum.
All right. Now, I'm not meaning to laugh at you, but these are spirits that have bound themselves to items or are around these items. What makes you think that they can't get through an eighth of a millimeter of plastic wrap you've got on to get to you if they really want to?
Well, I mean, we do have special things like, for instance, the gloves we wear. Mm-hmm. We could dip our hands into acid with those. So they're really thick, and to have anything attach itself to you most of the time, because it's attached to that object already, you have to have an actual energy exchange. So that energy from your hand grabbing that item would cause the transfer if they chose to attach themselves to you. And that is one reason why we don't let anyone touch any of the items or grab any of the items in the museum, just to protect them from getting any sort of attachment as well.
Okay. I guess I didn't realize it was through the physical contact that can make you become attached. I thought you have to give permission, Kaylee, for spirits to kind of attach to you.
Not always, not in every case. If you have an energy exchange and they feel that need or that connection with you, they can actually attach to you with an energy exchange.
Okay. And do you have video cameras and things set up at the museum so people can watch at night and see if any activity kicks up while you guys are sleeping?
We do have cameras that roll 24 hours. We do have some camera guys that watch overnight. At times we will actually do like live feeds overnight where people can go onto our website and they can just watch, or on our YouTube page and they can watch overnight and kind of see what's actually going on inside the museum and that sort of thing.
And do you capture much in the way of paranormal activity on these video cameras now, or once they're kind of lead lined and put into their place, they act nicely?
We've actually captured a lot of activity. I mean, we had dolls that have been drugged out. One of our dolls named Ada, she's padlocked in this box. She does like to move. She's been recently just added to one of the most haunted items in the world. She's very powerful, and she'll move, and it actually will cause our motion sensors to trigger, dispatching police and thinking that people are actually in the building, and here it was just her moving, and that happens quite often.
Wow. What do the police say? Are they like, hey, let's tie that doll down? We're tired of coming out here.
They're creeped out. Some of them, we've actually had some local state patrolmen that were in there after they were clearing the building. They were walking back up from the basement, and one of our dolls, our other doll, because we house two of the most haunted dolls in the world, and the other one's named Stimas, and it's reported that her eyes glow. We've seen it only one or twice, actually, now. But they said they came up from the basement, seen her eyes glowing, and they took off running out of the museum, and that's two state patrolmen.
Right.
So.
And they don't think you're just jerking with them and set this up to kind of spook them for tourists?
Yeah, well, no, if you looked at the doll, she actually has like button eyes, so they're the little circle things, and the eyes move inside, and she's actually made of all cloth. Just a real creepy looking doll, and I guess they said they saw her eyes glowing, and we've seen it happen prior, and they're a little creeped out.
Well, what do you do in that case, Nate? When all of a sudden you look over and your doll's eyes are glowing, do you talk to it? Do you try to calm her down? Do you run like hell? Do you leave raw meat on the bottom stair? What's the protocol for this?
I guess the times that I've actually seen her eyes glowing, one of the times was during one of our evening ghost hunts in the museum. Mm-hmm. And then the other time, it was just when me and Kaylee were there, and we just started asking questions, or we grabbed some equipment and, you know, we started recording with the audio to see if we can capture anything and different other, you know, like
K2 responses.
We did on the K2 meters and the Mel meters but nothing on one of the audio we did, and it was more of kind of like a growly, like deep, raspy voice. Mm-hmm. But the other time we didn't actually capture anything on audio, and I think one of the K2 meters only spiked like one time when we asked a question, and that was it. So, but the other times we actually had more than the other.
Well, do you have like Mike, if she's padlocked in a box, you know, are you afraid maybe you're doing EVP, she's responding from inside, but you can't hear it because it's, you know, in a box?
Well, the box that she's in, it has screen that's all the way around her.
Okay.
And she's built in like a wooden box, and then it has a door that opens in the back, and then a red light that hangs down above her, and the door in the back is basically padlocked shut. So, I mean, she is free to move around inside there.
So it's like a ferret cage?
Kind of, in a way. Technically, in a way, it's just like a screened box. But
And she moves around in there? You'll come in and she's in different places?
Yeah, she'll actually move. We do have actual video footage that's on our Facebook page on the Museum of Shadows. You can actually see her lean all the way to the right and then lean back up and her head like tilts. We have other footage of her head will move. Even we were doing like a Facebook Live just the other day, and you can see her foot move and different things. And yeah, she's pretty powerful.
And why is she so powerful, Kaylee? You're the sensitive. What's going on with this doll?
Well, her backstory is kind of sketchy as to how far back we came from. We know that she's from the 1890s, and she's a very rare doll. From what I've gotten from her, she's 6 years old. I have actually seen her in the museum multiple times. She's an adorable little girl, like the actual spirit form of Ada. She's wearing a long white gown, always has bare feet, long dark hair. But just like any child, anytime we're communicating with other spirits in the room, she gets really angry. She wants all the attention on her, and she tends to throw a fit. She's had light bulbs explode, all kinds of just crazy stuff when
she's
not. But she's
a little girl. Isn't she afraid of the other creepy things that you have in your museum? Like the spirit of the shrunken head guy, he's got to be kind of like, shut up and go back to your room.
We kind of call her the puppet master. She's not afraid of them. It's almost like she's in charge and everyone knows it. It's really hard to explain, but she's just has that spirit and that energy to her that commands, attention in the room. And we've had people come from as far as Montreal, Canada, just to see her. And they immediately go to her. They walk in. She's in the back room, and they make a beeline back there because they're like, I came all this way just to see her. And she knows it, and she's proud of it. But I think she had a pretty treacherous past as far as getting beaten as a human child. But that's as far back as I can get as far as information as to what happened with her, unfortunately.
So if her soul can be outside of the doll and move about, what keeps it from following you home? What keeps it from being around any one of you or affecting the guests of your museum?
Well, all those spirits are attached to the items for a reason. Usually it has to do with something very traumatic that happened to them. In Ada's case, you know, Ada was probably her favorite doll, so that's the item she chose to attach herself to. And she has a unique story, too. When she was found in a home, it creeped out the family. They threw her away, and she actually went to a landfill 20 miles from the home and returned 2 years later in the exact same spot from where they found her originally. So that's what I mean when I say she's quite powerful. As far as, like I said, we don't physically touch her. So, you know, she's connected to that doll for a reason. So as far as we know right now, there's no reason for her to connect to anyone else unless she chooses to by physical energy and that energy exchange.
Well, I know we'll get emails from the Right to Afterlifers. What do you do to help these spirits cross over? Do you ever try to get them into the light and seek help for them, or just let them be?
To be honest, I mean, they're more than welcome to cross over if they'd like to. We've had, you know, some local pastors and priests actually stop in. They've gave some blessings on a few items just because of some of the stuff, you know, like the axes that were used in a killing, just because the victim's attached. I mean, it doesn't always mean that they will pass over. But I mean, we also tell them out loud, just like I'm talking to you right now, that if they want to stay there, if they're happy, they're more than welcome to, and we won't judge them or hurt them in any way. So if they're comfortable, they're welcome to stay. But if they wish to pass over, they're more than welcome to do that also.
Okay. Let's start to hear about some of the fascinating items you've got. What? Give me a good creepy story. What's one of the freakiest things you have there, and what type of activity has surrounded it?
Well, I mean, we have Ada and we have Demas. We also have, let's see here.
Well, tell me about Demas a little bit.
Well, Demas is the one that is the doll with the eyes that glow.
Okay.
That's Demas. She's basically, the whole story about Demas was, is I guess a lady was kind of planting some flowers alongside her house and found this box. And when she opened it, this doll was inside there. And I mean, it's, we have, if you look at the photos on our, you know, Twitter page or Facebook page and that, you'll see a photo of Demas, and she is just like this raggedy doll and has these button eyes. And I guess the lady put her in her house and had it on display, and all this activity started happening, from hearing footsteps to a child screaming to like even a growling or grunting noise. And she ended up calling her sister or cousin over, and she ended up telling her kind of what was going on. And I guess the lady or the cousin picked up the doll and then ended up throwing it and said, oh, this is a joke. Well, she died 24 minutes later of heart failure before leaving the house. And according to what we were told, because of the whole, you know, medical HIPAA laws and Privacy Act, that the lady was in perfect health and never should have died. And that was from the autopsy reports that the agents told us about.
Mm.
So, that's why we did.
And then you thought, of course, yeah, let's bring this doll into our happy home.
Yep, of course.
Just the museum, not our home.
Just the museum.
Right. Okay, so we've heard about a couple of the dolls. We heard a little bit about the shrunken head that you've got. Talk to me about a few of the other freakier items.
We have a mask, a devil's mask. That's definitely one of the items that creeps people out. One of the stronger attachments we have with the attachments that bothers me the most, is we have an embalming bed from 1890, and it's one where they would actually fold it up and take it to the person's home, and then they do the embalming there, and you know, the people would come through and do the viewing of the body, and then they'd fold it up and take it back with them. And it's got original, you know, stains, everything on this bed. And it's got about 3 really heavy male presences attached to it, and it makes me physically sick. I actually can't be in that room for more than 20 minutes without getting extremely nauseous. So that's definitely one that a lot of people say it really bothers them when they're standing in that area, just because it's so heavy, and a lot of people report getting sick in that area.
Okay. And what are a couple of your other favorite items?
We have a lot of military items, from like cannonballs to bullets to actually helmets that were dug up. That one of them, you can clearly see, you know, a bullet went through the helmet, killing the soldier. We've had a lot of activity with military personnel in the museum. Even on our ghost hunts, we've actually had some current military personnel actually attend one of our ghost hunts, and they, one of the sergeants that was there gave some orders, and we were using the SB-11 spirit box, and you could hear all out communication to names, to ranking, to all this military terms that, you know, I wouldn't know, or Kaylee wouldn't know, because we're not in the military, but that's where Travis, the guy that was with the sergeant, he was giving out some orders and was able to verify all this information. And because he, you know, he's in military, but
and we have that on thermal imaging too. Looks like them all lining up in a row, and he asked them to stand at attention. So it was really cool.
We have a creepy oil lamp that's from Turkey that has a pretty crazy side to it. To where items like the guy that was making it, basically anybody who touches it, it doesn't really go well for them. Everybody that usually touches it ends up either dying or having something serious happen to them. So.
And you put, is it not just like one giant powder keg of bad ideas in this museum for you? Well, you know, if something ever happens and you got to get that stuff out of there quick and grab it. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's just a very unique place. And the one thing that's really cool is we have a lot of people that come in and they want to tell their story. They want to tell us about what happened to them, and finally they feel like they have somewhere where they can go, and we understand them, and we don't think they're crazy for saying, hey, I've had this happen to me before, or I've seen an apparition, as to where they feel like they don't have a lot of people that have either experienced that they know or mm-hmm. that they can tell it to. So we've gotten a lot of really good feedback just for having something unique that people can go to and feel like there's finally a place for them where they feel like they can fit in or understand more of what's going on, just like stuff they've experienced.
All right. And I mean, how often are you getting new items into the museum?
We bring in anywhere between 2 and 5 new items every Wednesday out of quarantine. But every day we get in anywhere between 1 to 20 items per day donated. So you can imagine, you know, what a backup we have at this point in quarantine as far as bringing the items in. So that's really where the need came in to expand and get a bigger building.
All right. And when do you move into the new building?
We're going to plans to be moved into the new building by August.
Okay. And how do you pick a new building? I mean, what do the landlords say when you say, oh, yeah, by the way, shrunken heads, axes for murders, you know, a 1800s embalming table. You know, these are just some of the items we're going to bring in. Are they ever like, no, go do that somewhere else?
We didn't have really any sort of negative feedback. The towns have been really welcoming and just so excited to have so many people brought to their community. And that was really important for us too, was to find somewhere where we could help the community and boost the economy a little bit there by bringing people there and having them spend their money in town. And most people, it really doesn't bother them. Honestly, they just said, put in here, you know, whatever you want, that's your business and it's none of mine. So they were really open to it. So it was nice.
All right. The items that you're getting in, do you have like a list of, do you tell people, hey, we'll take anything except for, and kind of a list. So if our listeners are looking to add to your collection, they know what is acceptable and what's not.
I mean, honestly, we pretty much accept everything.
Okay.
So there's really no list as to what, you know, we won't take. I mean, we have Ouija boards that are in there that have been used in some crazy seances and different things, to
voodoo dolls
that were used. I mean, we pretty much take everything, and that's why we do the quarantine, just to make sure, you know, the research, everything checks out before, you know, it comes in there, that sort of thing.
All right. Tell me about the voodoo dolls. Where did you get these, and what's the story behind them?
We have 2 voodoo dolls that they actually came from New Orleans. It's kind of a lady went into one of the stores, and I guess it was she had some issue with one of the store managers and ended up getting removed from the store, and ended up, I guess, had like this history. I don't know if she just was causing trouble or what was really going on, but she ended up getting these 2 voodoo dolls and literally putting, like, using them on these 2 business owners, and literally after she started using them, they were both dead. They both died, and literally the businesses that they had burned to the ground, and it just didn't end well for them. So, and then the lady was actually found dead in her apartment. So there's always something with the whole voodoo thing. And I mean, to be honest, I've never used one, and I don't think I ever will. But I find that to be quite interesting. And then, you know, just with the research and verifying everything, it was all checked out. So it's kind of a unique story.
Have you ever found yourself afraid of what you've got, of one of the items?
I know definitely when we got Ada in, neither one of us knew which one of us was going to pick her up. We kind of had to do a flip a coin thing to see. We didn't know what she looked like. We actually had to go physically pick her up from the people's house, which is very common. A lot of people don't want to either ship it or they don't want to drive it and have the item in their car. So she was tied up in a black trash bag. We had no idea what she even looked like before her arriving to quarantine. So it was pretty interesting, and we were pretty creeped out, I guess. So it does happen. I mean, there are things that creep us out, but I guess we get so used to it once they're in there, as we think of them all, you know, as just part of the museum and part of the family, and we want them to be comfortable there. We don't let anyone do any sort of provoking. We unfortunately have had that happen in a few instances, and they had to leave, but we've had some people run into some bad luck because of it. So that's definitely something we don't allow in there.
Are you ever visited in your dream state by the spirits in the museum?
To be honest, I haven't really had any sort of thing or anything visit me in the dream state. Not that I know of, anyway.
What about you, Kaylee? I know that you were getting premonition dreams when you were younger. Knowing that you're kind of vulnerable in that state, did the spirits ever come to speak with you there?
I've had dreams with Ada in them a couple times, as her, you know, in her human form as a little girl. But they were never anything as far as I was just playing with her and running around. It was almost like she was one of my kids type thing. So it wasn't anything scary.
Are the spirits ever threatening to you two?
So far, I haven't had anything threatening. Just more, like I said, really nauseous. We've had they will show you how they felt before they've passed a lot of the time. So it is very common to feel, you know, I'll feel different pressure points in my head, or I've had to stop during investigations before. And, you know, I've had someone coming through that wanted to communicate with someone there. So I had to stop and just say, hey, you know, your dad's coming through and he really wants to talk with you and give you this message. And then we'll continue to investigate. So, I mean, we've definitely had them communicate before, but I've never felt threatened, I guess.
Well, that's good. All right. For people that are dealing with haunted objects, do you have any suggestions on how they can handle it, what they should do, and how they can protect themselves?
Well, if you have a haunted object, the first thing, and if you don't want it in your house, the first thing you'd want to do is you'd want to maybe, if you have a storage shed, something like that. The main thing is finding out what item it actually is, because most people, they'll just assume it's an item and they'll get rid of it, and yet that's not the actual item. So the main thing is actually finding out what the real item is. And then you can do that by, for one, taking the item. If you have a storage shed in your backyard or a storage unit or somewhere else, a garage, move it out of the actual house and kind of see how the activity goes. And if it stops after you move that item out, that's one way you can kind of narrow it down. And then if you do find the item, then you can go from that point to whatever you want to do with it. But otherwise, if you want to keep the item and you're open to it, then that's where you want to kind of find out as to what all is really attached to it and what's really going on with it, and, you know, maybe some research and that sort of thing as to where you got the item and so on.
If people want to get rid of an item, but they don't want to ship it to you, should they burn it? Should they throw it in a body of water? Should they slide it underneath the neighbor's door? What is the best way to distribute these things?
Well, first of all, you don't want to break it. You don't want to burn it, because whatever you're doing, if you do that, basically you're releasing whatever spirit that is attached to that item, just letting it go. And for one, if you're literally standing right by the fire when you throw it in or break it, they're most likely going to attach to you right away. So I would not encourage that. But if they want to, you know, bury it, they could. That would be a good option. Put it in a box or tote, whatever it may be, however big it is, bury it.
Off location. I wouldn't do it in your own yard, that's for sure.
Okay. All right.
Or if they don't want to ship it, to us. I mean, we can arrange a pickup or something like that if they wish to get rid of the item. I mean, that is all doable. So,
all right, fantastic. Interesting stuff, guys. I wish you a lot of luck with this, and now I might have a reason to come to Nebraska.
Yes, you should.
We might, you know, what we should talk about is maybe coming out and doing a live broadcast from you, from your museum at some point.
Oh, absolutely. That would be awesome.
That would be intriguing. Just, you know, don't, I want a fully rubberized suit made of the same thing your gloves are made out of.
Perfect. Then you have to do a live broadcast over Skype for sure, so everyone can see you in it.
Yes, yeah, we'll definitely make it happen. Freaky stuff. Thank you so much. And how can people find more about you and your insane hobby?
They can go to museumofshadows.com, mm-hmm. and they can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all under the Museum of Shadows.
All right, you heard about it, folks. Let's special thanks to Nate and Kaylee Ratterman. And again, it's the Museum of Shadows in Elmwood, Nebraska, where all the creepy stuff congregates. That's it for this week. Speaking of creepy stuff congregating, Tim and I will be back with you next week right here. And for all of your mothers across the world that tune into the show, we want to thank you for all the love that you give. We want to let you know that without you, we would not be the men that we are today. Take that for what it means. But thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing us with your families. And may God bless you all.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? WashableSofas.com has your back. Featuring the Anabay Collection, the only designer sofa that's machine washable inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slipcovers made with performance fabrics. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Check out WashableSofas.com and get up to 60% off your Anabay sofa, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change, and certain restrictions may apply.